The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
We are back for the weekend, getting you ready, and the final couple of days of the month upon us. Welcome to the program. A lot to do today. There's some big stories lurking out there, and we are going to keep our eyes on all of them as we get you ready for the weekend and who knows what. And this is from Brett McMurphy, breaking this story today that the ACC's top scheduling model is 10 league games plus one non-conference foe. In this format, Notre Dame plays 10 ACC schools. Results would count in ACC standings. And it's possible Notre Dame plays Clemson this year. It's possible we could see two of those games if everything comes to fruition. Meanwhile, high school football all over the place, travel all over the place. How are schools going to get from one end to the other when there are an increasingly high number of states that you need to be quarantined if you enter? It's a problem for a lot of us who travel up, especially to the Northeast this time of the year. We'll keep our eye on that story, among others. Meanwhile, this is a story we're watching today. The NCAA Board of Governors are meeting as we speak. They could decide to cancel fall sports championships. Now, what would that mean? The headline would be scary. Wouldn't mean very much, but it could send a message, and we are watching and waiting, and we will talk about that with some of our guests today, to say the least, including Brett McMurphy when he joins us a little bit later on. This is interesting. This is a football player, three-year starter at Michigan State, Jordan Reed. He tweeted today, "Guys are testing positive across the country, left and right. Why is there still discussion on a season? Why is it taking so long to make a logical decision? Let me guess. Revenue." This is a starter at a Big Ten school questioning what his coaches, administrators at Michigan State and in the Big Ten and everywhere else are currently doing. Some reaction to that. And will we see more of that? Don't forget, this is 2020 when absolutely anything goes. So that's a really interesting story to watch from Jordan Reed today. Meanwhile, the Florida High School Athletic Association has a reverse decision. Now they'll start later than usual. This is quite a chess game going on right now with high schools across the country. We heard about Texas yesterday, Florida today, Alabama Wednesday deciding they're starting on time with crowds, with bands, with cheerleaders, even though the majority of the schools will not be in person. Guest today, and you may have remembered about a month ago, we had Alex Berenson on, the former New York Times reporter and number one New York Times bestselling author. He has become perhaps the leading critic in the country of the coverage of COVID, and he will join us at the bottom of the hour. It may take a lot of time to get his message out. Brett McMurphy joins us as well. Mike Oresko, former CBS sports executive, now the commissioner of the American Athletic Conference, and Wes Blankenship will join us in the final hour, maybe to give you something to laugh about as we head to the weekend. And I've already made my worst prediction of the college football season, and it involved baseball. I predicted last night that Anthony Fauci would look good throwing the opening pitch of the Major League Baseball season. Instead, he looked just like me trying to throw from the pitcher's mouth. Let's get to the calls at 855-242-7285. Love to hear from all of you. And let's start with Gene in Nashville, Tennessee. Gene, thanks. Good afternoon.
I heard about the notion of the possible wanting to change the name of Rupp Arena. I thought to myself, well, that's about the silliest thing I've heard. But if they did that, you'd have to do the same thing for Dean Smith Center, because as you're aware, the Harry Truman integrated the armed forces in 1948. Smith left the Air Force Academy to go to University of North Carolina, which was a Jim Crow program at the time in 1958. So therefore, you know, he would be guilty also, wouldn't he?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you bring up Dean Smith. I would argue, and I'm sure you know the story very well, Gene, that Dean Smith was probably one of the most activist coaches of that era. And that would be a tragedy if it happened to Dean Smith. I don't think it's going to happen to Adolph Rupp.
I don't think so either.
And yeah, I think it's a separate debate. And I really don't, you know, the Confederate debate about Fort Bragg and Fort Hood and all that. I'm totally baffled on right from wrong there. But I agree with you. I think it's ludicrous to start taking names off of buildings that have been there for 50 years.
Yeah. One point about Dean Smith, you know, he and Coach K, 9 miles apart, were quite rivals. Several years ago, the story was that Dean Smith was a very activist liberal Democrat, and Coach K, coming through from the military, he was a Republican. So I think it's kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Coach K played for Bobby Knight at West Point.
Yes, he did.
Gene, I'm glad you brought up Dean Smith, though, because there's no way I knew him very well, but I did interview him a few times and knew and had read volumes on him. And he was, in addition to being one of the greatest basketball coaches of all time, he's also one of the most interesting and courageous coaches of all time. And I'm really glad you brought him up.
Well, good. I have two brothers who went to UNC Chapel Hill, and I sort of kept up with things through them.
Yeah, well, I have. Well, thank you for the call. I have a lot of friends who are North Carolina graduates, and you know, I don't think. I mean, he got a lot of credit, certainly, but I think what he tried to do during that era, when it's easy to talk about now. It wasn't easy to implement. Back then. Thank you for the call. Really do appreciate it. Let's check in with Andy in Destin, Florida. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Paul.
Hey there.
I'm scared to death that we're not going to have college football because I just don't know if I can live through 4 more months of reruns, politics, and COVID updates. I think we'll all go insane. Having said that, I did see where the SEC presidents are meeting next week, and I believe that will probably to make some decisions about athletics. And I just wondered, you know, we talk about a lot, you know, testing and some of the activities and certainly, you know, fear of players and different individuals getting sick. But I'm sure that one of the main things on these presidents' mind will be what happens if, God forbid, there's a fatality during this time because we elected to play and do sports this fall, and how will we handle the media, and how will we handle, you know, the potential financial exposure? I haven't really heard too many people talk about that aspect, and I just wondered how you felt on that.
Andy, you have brought up, if college football is not played this fall, you have just isolated the main reason why it won't, and it's because college presidents do not want that exposure, and I think deep down they are scared to death about that. There is no way to predict. You can get the 50 best epidemiologists in the country and line them up, and they would probably tell you statistically somebody is going to die. That's just the way it goes. It depends on how it happened, but it would be a story that I think would be as catastrophic to college sports and to college academia as anything that we've ever experienced. Right now, I still think there is a tremendously strong push to get this season in some way, shape, or form. I was communicating with somebody today, and somebody in a position. I said, realistically, what do you think we can do here? He said, if we can get half the season in, we'll be happy. Now, I know that's contrary to what they're saying publicly, but that's how scared they are. And in relation to a fatality, I don't even know how to explain it. The game would shut down instantaneously.
And I think it would. And I think, you know, they have to look at also, you know, I mean, you every variable that you introduce, you know, from the online officials to the people on the sidelines to the people in the stands, that just, you lose more and more control as you go out on that. And so it just boggles my mind. And don't get me wrong, I hate to see college football not happen, but I have to believe that these presidents will ask these very pointed questions about how
they will
limit their exposure.
And you know, Andy, the presidents have a different responsibility. If you're the athletic director at Florida and 70 or 80% of your budget is going to get wiped out, you're arguing to play within reason. The president has more to lean on, as you know. He not only has the infrastructure of a school, but he has endowments. And I think they will view it differently. I don't know how they're going. I mean, next week is the most critical week. Next week's the week we've been talking about now for 2 months. And today is important. Next week's more important. Thank you very much for the call. We've had some really good callers already today. Alex Berenson at the bottom of the hour. If you missed his first visit, and you are one who thinks the media is in overdrive, overblowing COVID, you will definitely want to listen to Alex Berenson. He will be your best friend. We'll talk to him in a few minutes. More of your phone calls when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back, and really glad that all of you are here. And let's check in with Patrick next in Gainesville. Hey, Patrick, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
I am well. Thank you very much for the call.
Good, good. So... For all of the supporters of our wonderful president, for anyone that would like to call in, I would like for someone to admit that the president was wrong on this. Because if he had said, look, let's just wear masks, we probably would have had this pandemic under control. I look at my son. He has practiced his entire life devoted to the game of basketball. And now that opportunity may be denied to him entering into high school. Matter of fact, we're getting ready to go to Orlando to the Summer Jam Fest. I mean, I'm scared to death. I have an athletic mask, and, you know, he's out there playing this game. But who am I to deny him that opportunity when he has worked so hard in the game of basketball? But that's his dream. That's his dream. And we have so many students across this country that have devoted their time, their parents' money, gas money, going here and there to chase their dreams. But it's just the same, because here it is, we're getting ready for school, we're getting ready for the fall, and things are not in order. You know, we're getting ready to you know, go back into the classrooms, and it's just not right. Everyone is on edge, everyone is on pins and needles, and they just need to slow down and just kind of I don't know. I'm just frustrated, Paul, because, you know, again, who am I? I'm his parent, and I'm supposed to look out for his best interest. But I've seen the hard work my son has devoted to the game of basketball. And, again, I just think about all of the students. I think about my own students, and it's just a shame. We could have had this pandemic under control if we had stuck to the whole mask business. And here it is, he wants to come out yesterday and say everybody should wear a mask. It's crazy. We're 5-6 months in, and he wants to come out and say, let's wear a mask. I mean, just imagine not having college football here in the swamp. Just imagine that. That's unheard of. I'm 40 years old. I could not imagine Florida football not going on. And it's in jeopardy. It's in jeopardy because of, you know, vanity. You know, he doesn't want to wear a mask. Crazy. But at the end of the day, we're going to Orlando. We're going to the Summer Jam Fest. And I'm going to wear my mask. And they're taking extreme precautions. You know, everyone is doing the temperature check. And everyone is required to wear a mask. And immediately after that game, you have to leave the premises. So everyone is taking precautions. But as it pertains to school, you can't do those sort of things. I'm sorry, you can't do that. Why wouldn't you have 25 to 30 students in a classroom? And Paul, how am I supposed to teach with a mask on my face? I mean, I have an athletic mask. It's almost better than an N95. But that thing is tight around my mouth. How are the kids supposed to hear me?
No, let me say this, Patrick. I, first of all, I appreciate your honesty as a father. At this point, I don't know how we got to this point, but I'm concerned, and I know you are as where we go now. But hey, thank you very much for sharing that. I had speaking about wearing masks. I had my annual physical today, and first time I've been to a doctor all year. I mean, it's amazing many of you, I'm sure, have gone through this. I mean, you literally walk in the building, they take your temperature. Everybody's behind, it's like, a subway station in New York where everybody's afraid they're going to get their head blown off. And the doctor comes in with, it's like something out of, a science fiction movie with mask and glass and plastic. I mean, it's really amazing. Anyway, we started the broadcast off with a tweet from a young man named Reed, who's at Michigan State University, where he was talking about when and how long is this going to go on. He essentially said that college sports is being conducted for one reason, the revenue. And 20 minutes later, we get this bulletin in from Michigan State that says, after a second staffer tested positive, Michigan State has announced that the entire football team will quarantine and isolate for 14 days. It's important because that's the like what we just heard from our friend in Florida, that's the level of tension that exists and the fact that there's really nothing else you can do. And you know, when you don't know how many people have come in contact with the staffer, so you worry more about the programs that hear about stuff like this and just disregard it. Anyway, we are going to take a break. Alex Berenson, who if you missed the first time, you really need to listen to him. He takes a different view than a lot of folks in the media. And we will talk to the New York Times bestselling author and former New York Times reporter when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back. We mentioned the story coming out of East Lansing this afternoon that the Michigan State University has shut down practice and everyone has been isolated for 2 weeks due to a second staffer testing positive for COVID. Which brings us to our next guest. Alex Berenson has joined us many times in the past as a best-selling New York Times author. He joined us a couple weeks ago and we had so much feedback that we were delighted to welcome him, Alex, back, who has been quite busy since we've last seen you, being skewered by his old newspaper and going on a number of channels, including Fox News, to comment on it. Alex, it is thanks for making time. I don't know how delightful the last week or two have been for you, but from a distance, it's been pretty entertaining to watch you and your old homestead.
Yes. Somebody said to me, it looks like, Ben Smith, it looks like you guys don't like each other. So I never even met the guy before he wrote the article. Before he interviewed me for it. So, yes, it's been interesting. But, somebody has to stand up and say, here's what the media is not telling you. And here's things that the media is presenting in a way that that make this seem, as bad as it possibly can be when maybe it isn't. And here's some other stuff you can think about. And, people are going to have to make up their own minds. But I always try to provide data, that's very good, that comes from the government, that comes from scientific papers, and people will judge it for themselves. That's all I can do.
Alex, I know most of the people watching and listening heard you the last time, but in essence, what has been your biggest concern, the biggest thing that you have found fault with, primarily with the news media disseminating this story, which is only the biggest story of our lifetime?
First of all, I don't think it's the biggest story of our lifetimes, although I know it feels that way right now.
It does.
Look, you and I were around when the Berlin Wall came down. Hundreds of millions of people were freed. This is a really bad flu season in terms of the number of deaths it causes. I don't mean to minimize it. The flu is dangerous too, and if 100 or 200 or 300,000 people die from this year, that'll be nothing to laugh at. But I would remind people that the estimates about cigarette deaths in the United States are that 500,000 people die every year from cigarette smoking, or their deaths are accelerated from cigarette smoking. And guess what? You can buy cigarettes almost anywhere. Alcohol kills 100,000 people in the United States a year, and that's advertised on television. So we tolerate a certain amount of death in society. We have a free society, and we don't want to lose that. I was just thinking of you that the last time we talked, Clemson was reporting all these football players who'd had positive SARS-CoV-2 tests. Have you heard about any of them being sick or hospitalized? No, you have not. The reason is that this virus, although it can be very deadly, especially to extremely elderly people and to people with serious comorbidities, is not that dangerous to younger and healthier people. And I don't mean, when I say younger, I don't mean 20. I mean people in their 30s, their 40s, even their 50s. That's the number one thing that the media has not told the truth about, is just how heavily skewed the risks of this are towards people who are really sick or really old.
And it's worth noting that Clemson put out a statement today after retesting hundreds of times. They didn't have a single positive test, which is not really the most germane thing here, except that this is an issue everywhere. I'm curious about the sports part of this, because I know we talked about it the last time, Alex, and you had some very strong opinions of sports getting shut down and now the return of sports. How do you think it's going so far? And especially as we get past the NFL next week, and we move into this college football picture, which seems to be, at least from a media standpoint, to be the most complex.
You know, I think. Look, I was watching the Nationals and the Yankees last night with my daughter. You know, my daughter's 7, and she likes baseball, and it's something for us to do together. And I think, you know, you can't really overstate the importance that sports has in society and making society feel normal. Now, do I think that that these teams should open with people in the stands? I do. But, you know, for liability reasons or other reasons, they're not doing that. But even so, better to have something than nothing, I think. You know, in terms of college football is very interesting, right? Because these athletes and these students who are watching are at very, very low risk here. I mean, they are at the lowest risk. In many countries that have had severe COVID epidemics, the number of people between the ages of, you know, 15 and 25 who've died is zero. And I'm not exaggerating. It's zero in some of these places. And so that's, you know, we need to remember that. You know, I'm a cynic about college sports. The programs make an enormous amount of money on college football. They want college football to be back. And, you know, on the other hand, I guess they don't want to get sued. So I don't really believe that health is driving any of these decisions. If health were driving the decisions about schools, schools would be reopened in the United States, period. Schools and colleges should be open. And the more data I see, the more convinced I am of that.
Alex, you're a graduate of Yale. Your school and the rest of the Ivy League has punted football until the spring. I realize that just being an alum doesn't mean that you're involved in the decision, but I am curious what you thought of that, because it seemed to have an effect on a lot of other leagues, and maybe even affected the Big Ten, which made an announcement the very next day that they were going to cut several games out and play a conference-only schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weak decision. It's a decision the Ivies can afford to make. Yale has a $30 billion endowment and doesn't make any money on football. Yale doesn't care. You know, I mean, the Ivies are behaving, to me, they're not behaving like leaders. There hasn't been a lot of leadership almost anywhere you look since this pandemic has begun. The leadership has all been, let's be as scared as possible. Let's do everything. Let's only worry about COVID deaths. Nothing else matters. And that's not what leaders do. Leaders think about all of society, and they think about the 6-year-old who needs to go to first grade, and the 19-year-old who got a scholarship to go to school, to college, and is the first one in his or her family to get that. You know, this is all single entry accounting right now. It's only about COVID, and the Ivies can get away with it. They have a lot of money, but that doesn't mean that what they're doing makes any sense.
So in terms of what you think should be done, I think I know the answer to this, but I'll ask it anyway. As all these college leaders gnash their teeth and try to figure it out, do you think in your mind there should be any doubt that students should be on campus and college football should be played?
No, I just don't. I mean, look, college football is dangerous. Okay, people die in training, you know, in August in the summertime. They break their legs. They break their necks. When did college football become something where no one was ever allowed to get sick? And by the way, I don't want any of that to happen, but it does happen. And somehow only now, like, are we cognizant of the risks? And I just can't say it enough. If you look at the numbers, the risks of COVID to people in this age category they're almost hard to measure. They're so small. And people will talk about, well, maybe we don't know about the long-term effects. You know, we don't know. You're asking, in this case, you're asking me or anybody else who's on this side to prove a negative. Of course we don't know about the long-term effects. This thing's only been around for 6 months. Right now, it doesn't really look like there are severe long-term effects for most people who get COVID, especially if they're asymptomatic, especially if they're young. Can I promise that? No, no one can promise it. But this is why we have to accept a little bit of risk in life.
Alex, just for some of those out there who have not followed you as closely, and it's certainly a fascinating point of view, How did we get here? We are 4.5 months into this, and yeah, I mean, I said it a minute ago. It seems like the biggest story of my lifetime, only because it's hard to see through it. I know I've given you a question that would take 4 hours to answer, but is there a way to make this succinct? Why are we going through this?
The most succinct answer is that we threw out a generation of scientific recommendations about what to do about respiratory virus pandemics. Okay, for 15 or 20 years, people very carefully considered lockdowns, and they considered masks, and they, you know, it's not like the coronavirus is new, but people were talking about flu epidemics as a really serious problem, you know, really starting in 2003 when SARS hit, and there was a lot of debate about what to do, and we basically threw it all out in a matter of days in March. Why did we do that? That's a question that, you know, that's the question that takes 4 hours to answer. And I'm not sure I have a great answer. I think people were very scared about what they saw in Italy, very scared about what came out of China. The lockdowns in China seem to have worked. I mean, at this point, I don't think we can know anything about what really happened in China. And maybe we never will. And if you remember, the promise was, we're going to flatten the curve. This isn't going to go on forever. But unfortunately, once you start a lockdown, there's a lot of political pressure to continue it. And, you know, so you've seen these states have, they've backed off very slowly, and now that positive test results are increasing, you know, there's pressure to put them back on. There's a lot of media pressure. It's a very, very strange situation. And right now, even in the Sun Belt, which is obviously there's a lot of positive tests, there's a lot of community transmission, the deaths in the Sun Belt are much lower than they were in New York, or they're lower significantly. I won't say much. They're significantly lower than they were in New York City alone in March and April, and everyone seems to have forgotten that. We're talking about deaths in the low hundreds in Florida and Texas, which are huge states of daily deaths. And in Arizona, for example, I guarantee you your listeners don't know this, the number of people hospitalized in the state of Arizona for COVID has gone down 25% in the last 10 days. Okay, it looks like we may be past the peak in some of these states, but the media will not talk about this stuff.
And one or two questions, Alex, and I'll let you go. But in terms of the media, I mean, and again, I introduced you earlier. You were a financial reporter for the New York Times for a number of years, considered among the premier in this field. So you have a good perspective. You've been on a million shows on most of the major networks. You've been profiled by your old newspaper. Why do you think the media is doing what it is currently doing mostly across the board, not entirely, but mostly?
I mean, I think there's a lot of groupthink. I think it's very hard to get away from the narrative. I think that just like public health experts, it's easier to say I'm panicking, or you don't say I'm panicking. You say here's the worst case scenario, and if it doesn't come true, I don't look bad. If I say here's what I really think is happening, it's not so bad, and you're wrong on that side, and things are worse, you look bad, and people accuse you of having killed people. Okay, and I will say this. People say to me, who are you? You're not a doctor. You're not an epidemiologist. You're not a virologist. Why do you get to talk about this? That's a totally fair question. Here's why I get to talk about this. I'm not telling anybody how to practice medicine. I'm not telling anybody that I know how this virus works or that I'm some kind of expert on viral transmission or anything like that. Here's what I'm good at and what I've been good at my whole career. I'm good at looking at numbers and figuring out whether they say what the people who are talking about them say they say. That's what investigative financial reporting is. That's what a lot of drug industry reporting that I did is. And that's what a lot of this is. And that is something that I will stand my ground on.
Well, always great to have you on, and I'm certainly riveted by what you're saying, but I will say, as one of your biggest fans of your novel series, I do miss them very much.
I do too, Paul. I want to get back to John Wells. I do.
For those who don't know, that John Wells is just one of the most fascinating characters, I mean, you had just a boatload of number one best-selling books, and I know you'll get around to it, but I just wanted to say that as a fan. Alex, thanks for coming back.
Paul, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Alex Berenson, the former New York Times reporter who has become one of the most controversial figures in the country right now on COVID. We'll take a break. Much more to come as we continue.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing?
your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
And we welcome you back, and really great to have you with us. Shannon is up next. Hey, Shannon, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today, sir?
We are doing great.
Hey, was there ever a more appropriate first pitch in baseball than Fauci's throw that night? I mean, I have never seen a worse flattening the curveball in my life. That was terrible.
You know what you're getting into when you do that. The one thing that would make me nervous, and I've done things like that in front of big crowds, particularly playing golf, you get nervous from the crowd, but there was no crowd. I don't know why he was nervous.
Paul, I don't think it was nerves. I think it was lack of athletic ability.
Okay, well, he is 78 years old, but he should have known better. In the old days, they used to, the president would show up at a game, he would be sitting in his box, and he would just kind of toss the ball to the catcher. That's what he should have done. He should have never gone out. I mean, you compare that. Remember George W. Bush at the World Series after 9/11 at Yankee Stadium? I mean, the guy, he was a baseball player, but he fired a strike right over the middle of the plate.
Yes, he did. And I wondered, did you see the pictures of Fauci in the stands?
Yes,
after
I did.
The first pitch. And any comment on that, Paul?
I think optically it was a terrible look for the nation's number one infectious disease expert to be seen without his mask on or his mask below his mouth. I thought that was a terrible look. I mean, he had to know there were cameras everywhere. I realized that was his wife next to him who did not have a mask on at all. It doesn't matter. He should have had the mask on. He's been telling me and you to wear a mask for the last 4 months.
You know, and it really came off as a lot of, you know, do as I say but not as I do type thing. The last thing that I wanted to say, and I wanted to respond to an earlier caller regarding, you know, Trump and his handling of the coronavirus. And I feel for that guy and his son because, as I've shared with you, my son lost his senior year of baseball on the high school level. They went home for break and never went back, and baseball was canceled. And that was the end of it, you know, and he had a hard time dealing with that. But, you know, Paul, you spend time and you go back and you look at our country as a whole and our leadership as a whole handling this from the very beginning. There's been a terrible amount of missed calls, miscalculations, and muffs on this to go around from Trump. And I agree that he did not take the serious approach that he probably should have taken from the beginning. I don't have a problem saying that. But I also heard Fauci, you know, Pelosi, de Blasio, many, many others say this is not that big of a deal. It's not much to worry about. You know, the World Health Organization at one time said it wasn't transferable person to person. You know, so there's a lot of blame to go around. And I don't think it just weighs on one person's plate, so to speak.
I agree with you on that. And that's why I got upset the other day. The president is symbolic. And yes, he does influence what happens around him, and I think he has that influence, especially with the CDC and other people. But ultimately, I'm not going to blame one person in this country for where we are. This is all of our responsibility.
Well, you know, and the thing with the mask, Paul, and, you know, I've called in a couple of times, and I've looked at statistics and articles and interviews, and you and I have talked about it. The research and the findings on masks, and you know this as well as I do, it's very mixed. It is extremely mixed.
No, you're right. I've come around to that now, but I think the mask is basically saying protect yourself. I saw where McDonald's today is requiring masks. I mean, everyone's requiring them. I hate to run, Shannon. Thanks for the call. We were up against a break. A lot to do. We're off and running here on a Friday afternoon. Stick around.